As the Israel-Hamas war devastates Gaza, it can be tough for us on the other side of the world to keep up with what's happening from day to day. When there's an explosion or other event, we'll sometimes hear conflicting reports about what caused it, where it came from, who was responsible. When videos circulate on social media, it can be hard to tell what's legitimate, what's been edited, or misrepresented. Our next guests are here to help us avoid misinformation coming out of a conflict like this and to better understand how reporters and news organizations handle coverage in a war zone. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered questionable material on social media about what's happening in the Middle East right now? Do you have people in your circle on social media who share things that you think are suspect? Where do you go to double-check information? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Emily Vraga is an associate professor at the Hubbard School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota, where she holds the Don R. and Carol J. Larson professorship. She studies misinformation and how people respond to news on contentious issues. She's a graduate of UW-Madison. Emily, thanks for joining us in the studio.
It's great to be here.
And Lindsay Palmer is an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. She researches international news and war reporting. Lindsay, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Lindsay, let's start with you and how news organizations try to gather reliable information in a dangerous zone where there are often interested parties who may not want them to have that information. What are some of the main challenges?
Well, I think the challenges really depend on exactly where the journalists are able to go in the first place. So if we're thinking about news gathering in person, right, in the middle of a conflict zone, you know, foreign correspondents are not the people who are sitting back at headquarters, right? Then the very first challenge is, where am I allowed to go? Where can I actually physically be? And when, particular governments and militaries and militant groups are restricting movement across borders or within, you know, particular locations, that's the first challenge. You know, foreign correspondents can't cover news when they've been barred from going in and telling the story.
Emily, that's the challenge at the information gathering end. On the other side of things, it's very easy to promote misinformation. You don't need those permissions. You can do it quickly. How big a challenge is that arms race, in a sense, between the forces of misinformation and the people trying to gather real news?
I think you hit exactly on it. It happens so very quickly that people are not necessarily stopping and thinking through, do I know this to be true? What work have I done to make sure that this is something that I want to be sharing, that I want to be associating with, and instead just sharing out of identity, out of horror, out of wanting to do something, even if it's something as simple as sharing and saying, look how awful this is.
Lindsay, how important is it for news outlets to have these actual reporters on the ground in these areas to get this legitimate information out to the rest of the world?
It remains so incredibly important. I think in an era where, you know, we've been in this era for a while now, right, where we can just circulate information, we can, unfortunately, you know, people can create very convincing, entirely fake videos, and they can also share half-truths, right, and you know, information that hasn't been properly investigated and verified yet. In this environment, we need the people who've been trained to gather information, to present it as fairly as possible, from their perspective on the ground. We need these people, I think, now more than ever.
Emily, when we are on whatever social media platform we might prefer to use, how do you recommend we take a moment, look at a story, and say, especially before I share this, what do I do to make sure that this is legit?
The first and most important thing you can do is taking that moment. And so before you even get on the social media site, when you know there's going to be a lot of misinformation circulating, reminding yourself that I deeply care about accuracy, that I see my role as promoting high quality information, can help you when you get there and you see all this emotional content coming at you and you really just want to get engaged with it. And then the second thing is to go someplace else and verify. Do a little bit of almost news reporting of your own. Look at a bunch of different news sites. Look at intergovernmental agencies who are committed to getting the best information out there. And if they're all reporting the same thing, you can have a lot more faith that that is what we know to be true.
We're talking about misinformation and how we gather legitimate information in a war zone. Emily Vraga is with us from the University of Minnesota. Lindsay Palmer with UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions. That's 800-642-1234. Let's look a little more specifically now at the conflict that that brought this discussion to the fore in Gaza between Israel and Hamas. Lindsay, does anything stand out to you as unique or particularly challenging for that foreign correspondent working in Gaza and nearby?
Well, unfortunately, you know, there's not a whole lot about this that does stand out. It's been challenging for foreign correspondents to cover what happens in Gaza, you know, for many, many years. In 2008, when there were, you know, rockets and missiles being launched in that area, there were very few foreign correspondents who were able to gain access to cover the conflict. It's kind of, in many ways, just the kind of latest articulation, I think, of a very long history.
Emily, as you watch stories, videos, often fake videos or very old videos repackaged as breaking news, what kind of things are you seeing specific to Gaza right now when it comes to misinformation?
So I think two things that I see a lot of is, one, a lot of things taken out of context. So taking a video of a movie and saying, look, this is people faking deaths in the conflict. So making sure that we recognize where that content's coming from, and that's where a reverse image search would help you really find that quite easily. And then second, because there's often a language barrier for us in the United States, people saying this is translated into something that it is totally not. And so playing up this idea that we don't know what they're saying and using that to misrepresent what people are actually saying.
Lindsay, has that the social media misinformation and disinformation element changed things for foreign correspondents? Are they looking over their shoulder in some ways at what stories are being told about the stories they're trying to cover?
I think absolutely so. I think that you know, for a while now in war correspondence, you know, the different journalists who go and cover these conflicts are not only sort of battling in a metaphorical sense, mm-hmm. of course, with the challenges that they face on the ground, you know, trying to kind of dodge bullets and sort of get the story out there while staying alive. They're also constantly having to sort of check social media for this misinformation, trying to sort of anticipate it. They can also be targeted because of misinformation that circulates about them and their networks. They are expected to also, you know, tweet and sort of put information out there and maintain a presence on social media. So I think it just kind of adds several layers of stress and danger to their jobs.
Lindsay, you mentioned, Emily, tweeting, now X, of course, Twitter. As you watch platforms and how they handle how information spreads, social media is not well known for keeping false information from flowing. What are you watching on X and other platforms when it comes to how they deal with these issues?
So I think it's a real challenge. X has gotten a lot of good criticism for some of the steps they have taken, especially getting rid of some of the teams that are dedicated to trust and safety. I think that that's a real problem, and we need to see a lot more investment in content moderation across platforms. Platforms need to be taking some of the resources they have and dedicating it to making sure that the people on their platform are safe and the information flowing through those spaces is as accurate as possible.
We're talking to journalism professors Lindsay Palmer from UW-Madison and Emily Vraga from the University of Minnesota about how we as news consumers can evaluate news coverage of the Israel-Hamas war, avoid misinformation, and understand how actual reporting is happening in a conflict zone like that. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How do you follow news about what's going on in Gaza? Where do you go where you think you're finding reliable information? Do you see a lot of suspicious things coming across your social media feeds? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about misinformation, disinformation, and media coverage of the Israel-Hamas war and what's going on in Gaza now. Our guests today are Emily Vraga, journalism professor from the University of Minnesota, and Lindsay Palmer, journalism professor at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you evaluate what you see on social media when it comes to breaking news like this? With controversial arguments surrounding it at the time, what questions do you have for our guest experts? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I want to give a listen to one news outlet issuing a correction related to Gaza. Here's BBC anchor Mariam Mashiri apologizing for an error in their coverage.
Now, before we go, earlier on BBC News, we reported on some of the pro-Palestinian demonstrations at the weekend. We spoke about several demonstrations across Britain during which people voiced their backing for Hamas. We accept that this was poorly phrased and was a misleading description of the pro-Palestinian demonstrations. Now, here's the weather.
Lindsay, how important is it for news organizations who want to be viewed as legitimate news organizations to offer corrections, whether of fact or interpretation like that one?
I think it's so important, and I think that it's actually admirable when news organizations just, you know, hold accountability, right? They take responsibility for themselves and say, we messed up there. I think that in such an incredibly vexed, you know, conflict like this one with reverberations throughout the world, you know, right here in Madison, Wisconsin, right? We're seeing people deeply affected by this on all sides. The precision of terms and the preciseness with which we talk about the things that are happening is the difference, you know, between really causing harm and just telling the story, right? So I think it's vital.
And Emily, how about organizations, whether attached to media outlets or independent, devoted to fact-checking? We had this big rise of fact-checking groups. And then they were flooded because then social media came along. Are there efforts to do these things that you think are paying off?
Yes, I think fact-checking from professional fact-checking organizations, from news organizations, is absolutely essential. When I tell people you should be trying to verify whether something's true or not, that's the first place a lot of people are going. That's the first thing that's coming up in Google search or whatever other search engine you use. And so if that weren't the case, telling people to search wouldn't be all that useful a strategy. We need them there to make sure that we have the information we need to know what's true and false.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Letitia is with us in Racine. Letitia, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up?
Yeah, I just want to let you know that I watch Al Jazeera News because the Western media has done a poor job of giving us Palestinians' side of what's going on.
Letitia, thanks a lot for the call. Lindsay, can you talk about at least the perception often voiced about bias from Western media outlets when they cover issues in the Middle East?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. And, you know, I think that it's an astute observation from our caller that there is a tendency, I think, probably in most media, right, most even news media trained and sort of originating here in the West, to have some kind of a perspective, whether or not it's something that we like to talk about or think about ourselves as journalists. It is common, I think, to sort of have a history of presenting a story in such a way, right, that maybe one doesn't even notice that's happening anymore. And so I think one way around that is to actually try to diversify your news diet and sort of look for, you know, is the story being told differently in different news outlets? And can you sort of put all of those together to get the whole picture?
Letitia, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Emily, do you have thoughts on how we can diversify our media diet, as Lindsay was just suggesting there, but make sure that we're not stumbling into less legitimate, less worthwhile sources?
That is a tough question. And that is one of the things social media is supposed to be good for, is giving us a diversity of perspectives. So I think even as much as we're talking about the need to be really careful about what we're getting on social media, recognizing there's a lot of misinformation, there is also a lot of value to having a lot of different voices offering their perspective in one place for us.
We are talking about covering conflict, including the current conflict in Gaza, and how misinformation and disinformation can spread on social media. Lindsay Palmer and Emily Vraga, both journalism professors with us. Lindsay, I want to talk a little bit about often unsung heroes that you have focused on a lot in your work. We might see the name of the BBC correspondent or New York Times correspondent. You've focused a lot of attention on their local partners in conflict zones. Can you talk about the roles they play?
The local partners in conflict zones are often the people who do the most dangerous work in the process of covering these stories. Sometimes they do almost the entire job themselves. They translate for foreign correspondents, they help them get interviews, and they also play a security role in the sense that they, you know, usually have the cultural knowledge and the linguistic skills to be able to tell if they are in a sort of dangerous situation and if the foreign correspondent actually needs to leave the site where they are. I think in this particular part of the world, there's a long history of both Israeli local journalists working with foreign correspondents, also Palestinian journalists working with foreign correspondents, depending on the conflict and the amount of access that's allowed. And so it is absolutely something that's going on now as well. And then there are, of course, the local camera people, producers, photographers who, as we know, are getting killed. One example is Reuters Lebanese photographer Isam Abdallah, who was just killed a few days ago with the conflict unfolding in Lebanon.
Emily, I want to talk about the proliferation of misinformation spreading technology, I guess. Social media platforms, you could make up stuff in print. Now it seems easier to mislabel videos. Now we're getting to the point where we can use so-called AI to make our own videos that look authentic to people who might not know better. Can you talk about how the technology, at least it seems to me, is making things worse and harder when it comes to bad information?
I think that's true. Misinformation is not new, and it's been around as long as people can communicate, but we're able to reach a lot more people with misinformation now through social media and through other sites, and a lot more people can create it in convincing ways. And so I think that it's another space where it really pushes the news consumer to be more careful in thinking through not just what does this content look like, does it look accurate, is not a really good way to know whether something's true or false. The best way we can do that is by looking across a lot of different sources.
And Lindsay, as you watch this current conflict in Gaza, do you have sources you point people toward where, whether it's international correspondents and or local correspondents, where do you recommend people look for great information?
That is such a tough question. And I still certainly think that, you know, it's good to be looking for professional news sources as much as possible. You know, as we know, right, there's a process by which professional journalists are sort of trained and their editors are trained to look at information and make sure that it's accurate. I do think, though, that instead of pointing anyone to one source, I would just say try to find as many different professional news sources as possible so that you can get the many, many layers of a conflict as devastatingly complex as this one.
I've been talking about misinformation more generally, Emily. Let's talk about disinformation. That's part of the story here, where people are actively motivated to try to create a false narrative. What are some of the biggest challenges with disinformation in an international conflict like this?
So, as you pointed out, disinformation is about having motive, knowing something is false and sharing it anyway because you want to advance some kind of political goal, some financial goal. I think one of the biggest challenges, though, is once it gets to social media, it becomes misinformation. Mm-hmm. The people resharing it mostly believe it, mostly at least think that there's a possibility it could be true. And if it is true, they want to be sharing it with other people. And so that distinction matters a lot for the creators. But when it comes to addressing its spread on social media, it becomes misinformation really quickly when we're dealing with people who are just innocently trying to participate in a conversation.
And Lindsay, with any kind of journalism, there's always the question of, you know, how reliable are official sources in this story, all the more so in a war zone. How do war correspondents challenge, try to dig into claims, say, made by the Israeli government or military or by spokespeople for Hamas or the Palestinian Authority? How can that sort of everyday journalism work in this kind of situation?
I think sometimes that everyday journalism can be a little bit harmful in the sense that there is this longstanding tendency to rely and perhaps over-rely, I think, as research has shown, on official sources. And this is something that communication studies has talked about for decades and decades in a number of different conflicts. So I think what's important is that foreign correspondents try their best to get the perspectives not only of these official sources, but also of just the everyday regular people who are the ones who are suffering the most, get their perspectives in there. And then editors need to make sure that those perspectives make it right into the content that people read.
We'll leave it there. Lindsay, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Emily, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Emily Vraga is an associate professor at the Hubbard School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. And Lindsay Palmer is an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. They joined us today to help us evaluate news coverage from the war in Gaza amid a flood of mis and disinformation and to find out how war correspondents do that kind of work in a very difficult situation.